Stan, right before the break, you were telling us about one of your favorite portions of the book.
Yeah, about Ignaz Semmelweis. Kathy wrote the chapter. I had dug out the original story, which fascinated me. And here's a perfect example of a guy who figured out the science, figured out what was going on, but was kicked out of the hospital. Kathy, why don't you tell the story?
Okay. Ignaz Semmelweis lived from 1818 to 1865. He grew up in Pest in Hungary and then went on to medical school at the Vienna General, in Vienna, and taught medical students at the Vienna General Hospital. And at that time, the lying-in unit at the General Hospital had been divided into two sections. This was the largest teaching hospital in Europe. One session was for teaching medical students, while the other was for teaching midwives. The idea of introducing medical students into the specialty of obstetrics was fairly new at that time. And there was a problem in the hospital where rows of women would often become infected, and up to 2 weeks after childbirth, it was typically an infection in the uterus or the genital tract, and it became a systemic infection within hours. And the death rate was very, very high. And not only the women, but their infants also succumbed to this. It was a real problem in the medical hospitals throughout Europe. And by accident, really, Ignaz Semmelweis discovered that the contaminants that were causing this were brought on the hands of his students and himself, actually, from the mortuary, where they did the dissections in the morning, into the lying-in unit in the afternoon, where these medical students would do internal examinations on these women. And often the exams were rough. They were inexperienced students. And women were subjected to several internal examinations over the course of the afternoon. Nobody washed their hands. Nobody realized that this bacterium, it was actually Streptococcus,
which they could never see, right?
Which they could not see, was carried on these medical students' hands. Semmelweis had a friend who was actually pricked by a scalpel during one of these dissections and became infected and ended up dying as a result of this infection. And his symptoms were exactly the same as the symptoms of all of these women and infants who had died. And Semmelweis introduced the very simple method of hand washing. He used lime water and insisted that all of his medical students, instead of simply wiping their hands on their bloody aprons before they did internal examinations, would wash their hands. As a result of this, Semmelweis ended up losing his job. He wrote about this. He did very good scientific recording of his results. He used good scientific protocols in doing laboratory experiments.
Why'd they dump him?
He wasn't playing the game the way he was supposed to.
The medical establishment throughout Europe was not willing to accept the idea that his theory was correct. They adhered to the milk metastasis theory that said that women were plumbed sort of incorrectly, and that the milk from their breast moved down into their uterus instead of operating the way that it should. And they thought that the pus that they found inside of these women was actually milk. There was the miasma theory, where they thought that it was putrid matter from swamps that was affecting these women and killing these women, and that there was absolutely nothing that they could do about it. The doctors at the time certainly didn't want to admit that their own hands, which were supposed to be healing these women, were actually killing them. And Dr. Semmelweis was called a charlatan. He was debunked throughout Europe for his entire lifetime. His theory was not accepted.
Now, Stan, you give me some examples. As you say, astronomers sometimes are the target in science was wrong.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and I, for good reason. Astronomers have taken, because they deal with the universe, and our concept of the universe has changed drastically over the last 100 years, less than that. They have spoken out and stood in the way of progress. The greatest astronomer, American astronomer of the 19th century, Simon Newcomb, made a strong statement in 1903, October, and the date's important, that all the evidence had shown that there would never be possible to fly a vehicle. That may be a balloon, but not a vehicle. This is 2 months before the Wright brothers' first flight.
Yeah.
And there were on the other end, in 1956, a year before Sputnik, the British Astronomer Royal said that space travel is utter bilge. Nobody would spend the money, and it wouldn't be a sensible thing to do. And we should develop better instrumentation for astronomy. And yet the crazy thing is that astronomers have benefited more than any other group of scientists from the space program.
Absolutely. Hubble, let's note the Hubble, right?
Yeah, and the Kepler and the Chandra, and there's a whole bunch of others. And it's truly remarkable that we have to remember here, astronomers know nothing about advanced flight technology, space technology. They're not the guys who designed the rockets or anything like that. And there's a long history of massive misunderstanding. My favorite, I have to tell you this. In 1941, a Canadian astronomer, Dr. Campbell, was sick and tired of all this science fiction stuff about going to the moon, you know, the pulp magazines and stuff. He was going to show that this made no sense. And so he did show that. He did a paper published in a scientific journal calculating the initial launch weight of a rocket able to get a man to the moon and back. Legitimate question. How big does the darn thing have to be? Bottom line, it would have to weigh 1,000,000 tons. Even for me, that's too big. Funny thing, 1969, still with a dumb old chemical rocket, we sent 3 guys to the moon and back. The initial launch weight of the rocket was 3,000 tons. He was off a factor of 300 million. Now, you talk about being wrong, because he didn't know anything about space travel. He hadn't studied the publications that were readily available to him. He assumed a single-stage rocket, too low a limit on acceleration, too low a limit on velocity of the stuff coming out the back end, assumed you had to provide all the energy, didn't seem to know anything about cosmic freeloading, as I call it. And so if you make enough stupid assumptions, you can come up with wrong conclusions. That's the basic notion there. And there are many other examples, but astronomers also try to pretend that they're experts on human behavior. Now, if you were listing experts on, on alien behavior, worse than that, experts on human behavior, astronomers would not rank high on your list of people, sociologists, psychiatrists, psychologists, maybe even lawyers, but astronomers? And yet they're going to tell us that aliens, if they were coming here, would contact us. They would have sent messages first, and a whole bunch of other things, which make no sense.